my sort of new baseline, like to what extent I'm going to need medication.
How about the word remission?
Yes, I would say it's in remission. I'd say I have a happy, full life, which is miraculous.
And in the fall, Anya and her fiancé will be getting married. She's also finishing a master's degree, and she'll be turning 30. A new, busy life. But there is one thing she tells me she will never take for granted.
I'd forgotten what the sound of silence was like. Like, I started to forget, like, what it was like to have some mental clarity and just some, like, peace and quiet. So, yeah, that's very precious.
Five people have had focused ultrasound in Canada for their obsessive compulsive disorder. Sunnybrook has follow-up data on 17 of them. What's your sense of the success rate?
So about 50 to 60% at 1 year of patients who undergo the procedure, they see a significant reduction in the most commonly used measure of OCD. It means that their disease is no longer in the severe state.
Doctors filed a request with the Ontario government to get the procedure publicly funded so they could help more people like Anya. But an expert committee decided not yet because they felt there wasn't enough evidence. There is an appeal underway of that decision.
That's your Canada Land. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read them all. Our website is canadaland.com. Today's episode was presented by Avis Favreau and reported by Avis Favreau and Kevin O'Keefe. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Max Collins is our production manager. Karen Pulese is our editor-in-chief. Our theme music is by So Cold. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Law professor and podcaster Michael Geist, hello.
Hello, Jesse.
Today on the show, Michael, Google is illegal. In the U.S., anyhow, their monopoly on search has been ruled illegal. What about here in Canada? Well, here we just want Google to be nicer. Welcome to Shortcuts, Michael, where we talk about the news.
In a landmark ruling, a federal judge has found that tech giant Google broke antitrust laws.
Apple's lucrative relationship with Google could be at risk after a judge ruled that the search giant is operating an illegal monopoly.
Google currently controls roughly 90% of the world's internet searches.
It's not a crime to have the most popular product that everyone uses. However, the big deal here is that a judge is saying the way Google conducts its business is actually breaking the law because it is illegal to act in a way that harms competition.
Michael, they did it. They actually ruled that Google has built, they've built an illegal monopoly on search. We've been talking about this for years. And it finally happened. Is this as big a deal as it seemed to me?
It is a big deal. It's, I think, the first of a number of cases that involve not just Google, but a number of companies. But in Google's case, there are at least a couple of big antitrust cases. This was one about how it built its search dominance and the argument that it's essentially bought its way through large amounts of traffic that made it tough for anyone else to compete. There is, in some ways, especially from a media perspective, an even bigger case that's upcoming in the fall, and that involves its alleged dominance when it comes to the advertising market and the digital ad market. And that could have huge implications in terms of what ad markets look like if a similar finding is reached. This one here, though, on search has echoes of what people have been saying for a long time and feels a bit like Back to the Future in terms of kind of Microsoft years ago.
Well, the lore is that because Microsoft was entangled back then, that's why they didn't acquire or otherwise kill Google. And that's what allowed Google to become Google. That was an example that's often cited of like, this is why antitrust works. It allows competition to flourish. We wouldn't have a Google if they hadn't come down on Microsoft the way that they did.
There's no doubt, I think, that these kinds of cases have a chilling effect, let's say, on some of the acquisition plans of these big companies. And some would argue that the horse is already out of the barn, whether it's Meta having bought up companies like Instagram over the years, or Google having bought up DoubleClick, and a range of other mergers that took place over the years have created the dominance that we have right now, and that it's a little late to put the toothpaste back in the tube. But what we're already seeing is that it's pretty tough for some of these big companies to move ahead with the kind of large acquisitions that they did a number of years ago. I mean, it's pretty clear that antitrust regulators, competition regulators in the United States and elsewhere are far more skeptical about these kinds of mergers than they were years ago.
It seems like such a big deal because, you know, years of doing tech talk stuff, it was always, you know, in a perfect world, governments would get serious about breaking these companies up. And now it's happened. And my understanding of like the specifics of this one are that in 1 year alone, in 2022, Google paid Apple $20 billion so that they would be the default web browser that pops up when you open Apple's Safari web browser. And that is how they created an illegal monopoly on search. And they also did that with cell phone providers, that when you open up that browser and Google's just sitting there, it's not necessarily because Google's the best, it's because they're paying for it. And some of the funny stuff that came out in court where Apple was saying, well, that's not true. We like Google better. Yes, we take their money, but there's not enough money in the world for us to make it Bing. And I guess that argument didn't wash.
Given the past of Apple and Microsoft, that's perhaps a bit more credible argument than some of the other companies that might have alternatives. But you're right. The allegation here is that Google is big and by far the biggest, obviously, when it comes to search, not just because it's good. I mean, I think many people would say perfectly good search engine, but because it was able to leverage its size and leverage these deals to squeeze out other would-be competitors when it came to becoming the default search engine. And Google would say, listen, people use us because we're good. They can always switch if they want. But the devil is in the defaults, as they sometimes say. The judge, I think, acknowledged that, yeah, sure, Google may be perfectly good. Yes, there's other choices, but these defaults have a real impact. And, you know, what we can look for, probably less likely to see a breakup on this case, but certainly the prospect of seeing requirements, similar to actually, frankly, what we saw with Microsoft years ago, where it's easier for users to choose other search engines and sort of a relaxing of that default so that it becomes a bit more of a level playing field for all the various search companies when it comes to devices, when it comes to some of these third parties.
Yeah, I guess the immediate effects, like you say, is like there's a chill effect and these huge multi-billion dollar deals, like they're going to be cautious about that, cautious about acquisitions, not going to want to look like more of a monopolist. It's funny, some of the stuff in this, like Google was saying, well, no, the consumer's got lots of choices. We're not a monopoly. They can search using Amazon search box. What? Like, that's a very different thing. Like, people search all over the place. They don't just search with Google. And then they listed all of these other places. You might go into your messaging app and you might search on Facebook. All these walled gardens and very specific. No, that's not a Google competitor. You guys are the monopoly. And then they argue it's because we're the best and the court wasn't buying it. And we move into the ad tech with this coming lawsuit. It really does feel like governments are actually getting tough now. And what about ours? Because there was some news about Canada and Google as well. We're going after them too for a DST tax.
Yeah, our approach has, I think, been different. And that's not to say that, you know, our competition authorities aren't sensitive to some of these issues and seized with Google and some of these other large companies. I think it's also fair to say we're a much smaller player. Our ability to exert some of these competition law or antitrust measures against these big companies isn't the same as if you're the United States or the European Union, where your market's of hundreds of millions of people. But, you know, I think that the Canadian government approach when it came to regulating big tech, rather than adopting sort of a strategy that said, we see some real potential harms here, and this is affecting businesses, affecting users, and we want to try to stop those harms from taking place. And those might well have involved both competition and also data, you know, privacy-related issues, because, of course, some of the secret sauce for these companies is to have as much data as possible. Instead, the Canadian government said, hey, why don't we just profit off of all of this?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do this, let's make you pay, and you can fund just about anything we want, including some of our policy objectives. And so if you look at the series of laws that we've enacted or even the process of enacting, whether that's the streaming law, C-11, or the news law, C-18, that I know has been much discussed on your podcasts, or even C-63, the online harms bill that envisions these companies paying for the whole system to deal with online harms, or this DST, the digital services tax, it's all about trying to turn these companies almost into a policy ATM, where the government gets to withdraw money, and rather than stopping them from doing stuff, let's just take money from them for doing this, and let's fund some of our pet policy projects.
And not a lot of money. If like, they're shaking them down for like loose change, you know, $100 million from Google for the Online News Act, and now this 3% fee on Google Ads. I guess that could be a lot. You know, and I'm told, you know, I read about this in The Logic. Friend of Candleland, Murad Hamadi, reported this, that this is something that Canadian news publishers have been asking for a long time, that, you know, when we sell ads, we have to charge tax on it, but Google hasn't. And it's just one more incentive that's taking the ad money away from us and over to Google. So this is going to be great for Canadian publishers. My guess is that that's not necessarily, well, let's take that money back to the Toronto Star. I don't know that it's going to have that kind of an impact, but, you know, I guess every penny helps.
Yeah, I got to say, I don't think it's quite that. We should probably distinguish between the legislation that seeks to create essentially cross-industry subsidies. So, you know, the streaming law that we want to take your money and we're going to divvy it up or have the CRTC divvy it up to a bunch of different places. Or we want the news stuff with, of course, now Google's deal to pay the $100 million a year and Meta now blocking news links. The DST is different. The DST isn't just on digital advertising. It's on a larger number of different kind of digital revenues. And it isn't small change, I have to say. Where the Parliamentary Budget Officer estimates we are talking about billions of dollars in additional revenue.
It's 3% on everything that Google charges, so that's a lot.
It's not quite everything, but it covers things like digital ads, digital marketplace, the revenues you generate from data. All those kinds of things start getting included. It is retroactive going back to 2022. So they're going retroactive back to trying to capture 3 years worth of revenue right off the top. And so the PBO, the Parliamentary Budget Officer, estimated, I think it was in the range of $7 billion, not just from Google, from all the companies that are affected by this. It's big money.
Yeah.
In some ways, that helps explain why the government has been willing to go ahead, even though there are very real risks that the U.S. is going to retaliate, arguing that this tax is discriminatory. And they have done that in other jurisdictions.
We get into trade war stuff.
Yep. And in fact, Google has started telling its advertisers that it is going to pass along most of that new tax to the advertisers themselves. So in fact, starting in October, they say that there will be a 2.5% additional fee paid for by advertisers that target Canadian users to account for the DST. Now, I should tell you, they do this in many of the jurisdictions where this DST has been levied. So they are seeking to pass along not all, but a sizable portion of these additional tax fees onto end users, which frankly raises a question one, who's ultimately really paying here? It's going to be the advertisers themselves that pay and perhaps pass that along, of course, to consumers. And if you think about this from the media space, if you're a media buyer, your budget is not going to grow by 2.5% just because Google now added this levy. You're going to have to consider, do I advertise less digital advertising via Google, or do I shift some money from some of the other sources to Google to account for the additional costs I'm now facing for digital advertising?
Oh, yeah.
It actually, I think, could result in less spending on Canadian news services.
It could have the opposite effect. Wow. See, this shows you what a big thinker I am. I've only heard of this tax spoken of within my little bubble of publishing in Canada, where it's been lobbied for as like, this is going to be great, that we need to level the playing field on behalf of Canadian publishers. In fact, this tax represents a much larger thing, as you explained to me. The part of it that's on ads is just a fraction of that. And then a fraction of that is this idea that it's going to bring business back to legacy media players. Why would it do that when all ad spending trends have been going in the opposite direction? And I get it. Like, you can't break up these companies just in Canada. They'll just stop doing business here. You can't say you've got to sell off YouTube Canada. I understand why antitrust never happened in Canada. We kind of have to wait for America or somebody big to do it first. But by looking at this as just like, well, maybe we can get a payday here, I wonder if the Canadian approach isn't actually working in the opposite. Because if you essentially turn these into piggy banks or ATMs, as you say, then you need them to be dominant because you're going to build the whole Canadian media off of this new revenue that you're going to slice off of them. All this Liberal government policy objectives that are going to be funded by these taxes and these measures then are dependent on these companies maintaining their massive position. So we kind of are like, we're trying to lock them in as monopolists while the Americans are trying to break up their monopolies.
I think it's exactly right. Whether that's in the media space with the Online News Act, C-18, or the Streaming Act with Bill C-11. The fact is the government increases our dependence on these large tech companies and, frankly, in many respects, increases their dominance. I mean, that's the irony with so much of this stuff. We're creating laws that in some ways increase the likelihood of dominance because only some of these large players can even play in that sandbox and pay some of these kinds of fees. Many others may decide not even to enter into the Canadian market altogether. So we lose competition. We increase in many respects their dominance, and we increase our dependence on them. I mean, you know, if you take a look, let's say, on the CanCon side, so that's that Bill C-11 streaming base, what's taken place since the bill passed? Suddenly big fights amongst Rogers and Bell for licensing U.S. content. It's not a focus on Canadian content. We're actually, in a sense, trying to outsource some of the payment for Canadian content to Netflix and to Amazon and to these large U.S. companies that are required to pay. And our Canadian companies are sitting there going to court and ready to fight over who gets the U.S. content and gets to license that. It's a bizarre approach that in many ways says that Canadian content decisions may ultimately get decided by Netflix or by Amazon or by Disney. And I'm not sure that that really leaves us in the kind of place that the government is trying to sell, where it's, you know, in a sense, repatriating CanCon and enhancing the amount of spending that takes place, even as, I'm sure you know, we're seeing record amounts of spending taking place already right now in Canada. So it's trying to fix a problem that may not even exist and creating a scenario whereby we are more dependent on these large tech platforms than ever before.
Michael, it's your first time on Shortcuts, but you listen every week, I assume. You know that we make it our business to duly note stories that people really shouldn't miss. Do you have something to duly note today?
I do have something to duly note. It's sort of a continuation, a little bit of our conversation around the online streaming bill. Some people will remember that as Bill C-11. And that was the bill that got a lot of attention when it came specifically to the issue of regulating user content and the notion that YouTubers and TikTokers and podcasters might find themselves subject to regulation. That legislation is now at the CRTC, the broadcast regulator, and they've started hearings focusing first not on issues about what counts as CanCon or how certain Canadian content or other content might be promoted, but rather how much some of the large companies are going to be forced to pay. It's all about a so-called base contribution. I raise this in large measure, one, because I find myself sort of nominally involved in it because I appeared before the CRTC and suddenly learned, somewhat to my surprise, that that meant that if these companies file cases in the federal court challenging it, they've got to copy me, and I'm essentially part of that same case.
You're like on an email thread you can't get off of.
Yeah, I get all these pleadings telling me that if I want to do nothing, I can do nothing, but if I want, I can actually make a filing to the court too, because this is going to essentially affect my interests, given that I appeared before the CRTC, even though they didn't listen to anything I had to say. So that, you know, there's that element, but even more from a media perspective, nobody's really duly noting it, so to speak. You know, we've got the occasional piece, Marie Wolfe at the Globe, for example, has covered it. But for the most part, we run into this, I think, really bad habit of focusing on legislation as it's being created, But so much of what really matters comes afterward in the implementation, whether through regulations or these hearings. And everybody's attention increasingly goes elsewhere. So we've got these cases, we've got these hearings, and frankly, nobody's paying all that much attention.
Well, I feel somewhat responsible. Maybe I'll do something about that. Duly noted. I want to duly note a change in plans here. Michael, as you know, on Shortcuts, we talk about the news. Today, I want to duly note some news about has been in the news quite a bit, especially here in Ontario. Social media discourse around poop in the town of Wasaga Beach, on the beach of Wasaga Beach, has sort of hit its peak poop. The reputation of a popular Ontario beach town is being gravely harmed by what its mayor says are misleading social media posts claiming that people are pooping in the sand. This is from Aaron DeAndrea at Global News. Mayor Brian Smith is calling on Premier Doug Ford to clean up the mess, which began last month after one TikTok user went viral for posting a video claiming that this has been an ongoing issue for years. So he's saying that the reputation of his town is being harmed because this isn't true. There is no poop on the beach. And yet, TikTok user Natty Lynn maintains that the mayor can say what he wants, but he can't deny all of us having experiences. If you go through my social media comments, you will see people speaking about this happening at almost every beach across Ontario, across Canada. This is not a new issue. Michael, I don't care how hard we have to dig, we are going to get to the bottom of this. I just want to put that on your radar and the radar of everybody else who feels like they have a right to know.
Well, duly noted.
That's Shortcuts, Michael. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a great discussion.
I can be emailed at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send in. Michael Geist, where can people find you and where can they listen to your excellent podcast?
Well, thanks, Jesse. They can find me online at michaelgeist.ca or Twitter at mgeist, M-G-E-I-S-T. The podcast that I put out on digital policy in Canada is called Law Bites, and they can find it on their favorite podcast app, much like they find Canada Land's great podcast.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson, with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our production manager is Max Collins. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Over my head, never heard nothing the old woman said. Her dishcloth's cleaning out all of my brain. All I know is that I'll never be the same. over my head. Never heard nothing the old woman said. Her disc claws cleaning out all of my brain. All I know is that I'll never be the cleaning out all of my brain.